Welcome back. I'm Samika Garcia.
And I'm Brad Davidson, and this is Breaking the Code,
a podcast series focused on debunking the myths about the discipline of behavioral science and arming our listeners with the information they need to make sense of behavioral science and to help them apply it to their work as marketers. So welcome back, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today's episode is called Your Segmentation Makes Us Sad. So just jumping right in, Brad, can you tell our listeners what segmentation is?
Yes, I'll do a quick dive into segmentation and why we're talking about it, and then we can just jump right in on why it makes us sad. So segmentation studies are, as the name implies, they take a group of people and they segment them, right? They turn them into different buckets. We do it in advertising because it takes a group, a target audience. A lot of people don't like that word anymore. So a potential audience, something like that. And it segments them. It cuts them into discrete groups that you can address differently based on either their purchasing behavior or their motivations, or target them differently based on their life stage, something like that. So segments are really just subsegments of the larger group of all the people who could either use your service or buy your product. And then you go about in a scientific way saying, well, within that group, there's a smaller set of groups, and we are going to approach them differently. And we use it in brand planning all the time. So that is what a segmentation study is. And a lot of times it gets shorthanded down to just segmentation. Now, Samika, when we started this, we had a discussion about segments versus personas. Do you want to just give a little definition on that and how they're different?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think this is an important one to call out. So I've been in the situation where maybe segmentation has been done, but just in conversation with colleagues, it's, you know, people are referring to, some people refer to them as segments, some people refer to them as personas. And I found myself thinking, wait, we did personas? Oh, no, I'm talking about segments. Oh, okay. Like, but they are distinct. And so just to call that out quickly. As Brad mentioned, segmentation is really the groups of people through the lens of how they engage with our product or service, what relevance our brand or product might have in a certain segment's life. But personas are more focused on the human within the segment. So things like we've talked about in previous episodes, values, priorities, lived experience, emotion, all of those subconscious, below the iceberg elements that feed into behavior, that is what makes up a persona. So without getting too in the weeds, I mean, ultimately, if we think about it that way, then we should be doing persona work, creating personas, which then we understand their behavior through that, and then group them by behavior to create segments. That's sort of the way that I think about it from like a linear standpoint. But again, they are two distinct things. Just wanted to throw that out there. But back to segmentation. So the title of this episode, Your Segmentation Makes Us Sad. Brad, let me kick it over to you. What is so sad about the way that we do segmentation?
I think everything you've talked about, it makes sense, right? Like segments are objects. They're things we create. Personas are syntheses of multiple people into a single sort of persona, right? The soccer mom is a persona kind of thing. Those things, they're problematic. They have their uses, right? But they're not what make us sad about segmentation studies. There's really three things that we just go crazy about, and I'll do them in order. So the first one is segmentations that get based on a single issue. So very often we're handed segmentation studies that will say, this person doesn't write our drug, or this is the purchasing universe of people buying this product or prescribing this product or interacting with this app or something like that. And then the segment literally boils down to people who use it, people who kind of use it, and people who don't use it with nothing else. And they'll say, so our high end, our high user segment, those are the people we really want to focus on. But all I know about them is the name, that they're the high end users, or they're the, you know, the high prescribers, they're the high engagers, they're the high whatevers, right? So that is so thin in terms of segmentation. All it really tells me is who's doing what in one specific way. which leads to the second part of what makes us a little bit sad and maybe a little bit crazy is it really then struggles to bear any relationship to the people who are making these choices. I may know that there's people who buy 5 cruises a year and people who buy 1 cruise a year and people who buy 1 cruise a decade and people who never buy cruises, but I don't know anything else about them. So why these like high cruise people are high cruise people, I don't know. In our space, the problem is we tend to then name these segments based on their behavior in this very narrow way and then define them as, for example, dabblers. So the number of times I've seen segmentation where doctors who are not prescribing a certain product at a high volume are called dabblers in that product makes me nuts. That does make me crazy because the definition of a dabbler is an amateur who doesn't belong somewhere. It's somebody who sort of casually does something. You dabble in painting. Doctors are not dabblers. They are professionals who work every day trying to, you know, engage with patients and make them better. So if they're not writing your drug, calling them dabblers doesn't really further my understanding of why they're not writing your drug. They may not like your drug. They may not like anything in the class of drugs that you're talking about. We really have no explanatory value there except for to know they don't write your drug. You don't like that, so you call them dabblers. And I often use the litmus on this one to say sort of like the outside view rather than the inside view of like, why are people behaving the way they are? We just observe those behaviors. I often feel like if we just said to the people who wrote these studies, I would like you to go into a doctor's office and tell this doctor to her face that you consider her a dabbler and see what she says. I just think sometimes when we put these segments together, they're not just thin, they're insulting. And the last one is really that they're, and this is the one that I think carries the most weight in this discussion, which is no matter what the segmentation study is in our industry, they always come back with 4 or 5 segments, and they're always exactly the same segments. Always.
That's so true. It's so
always
true.
Right. And so I
said dabblers, and I was like, I've had dabblers be a segment on multiple different brands. Like, wait, let me ask you, because I know you've had this conversation. So in addition to dabblers, like do a whole segmentation study without doing
one. Right. So you come to me and you go like, oh, I've just done this segmentation study, and I put on my, you know, my hat and go like, let me guess. There's one segments that are called the helpless and hopeless. They have no chance of ever using this product, whether they're a consumer, a doctor, whether they're whatever they are. Right. The helpless and the hopeless is the bucket on the far left of your segment.
Right.
We ignore them. They're never going to want to use us. Right. This is the rabidly anti-vax segment that will never get vaccinated. Right. OK, fine. They're one group. Right. That's segment one. On the far right, you have loyalists or sponsors or people who are going to talk to everyone about how wonderful you are. And those are your potential spokespeople. And those are like your, you know, typically we call them loyalists. And so those people are a kind of a target, but we don't really need to target them because they already prescribe our drug or buy our t-shirts or engage with our app or whatever it is. I mean, for you and me, it's, you know, prescribe the product. Okay, so that's two segments, right? We've got the hopeless and the helpless. And then on the right, we've got the loyalists, right? And then somewhere in the middle, we've got dabblers and like willing to be convinced kind of things. And they basically go like this. There's two segments who kind of engage with us, but they don't do it enough. And then we circle one or both of those segments and go, this is our target. And we need to move them to the right so they can become loyalists. All we care about is their purchasing behavior. So all we care about is increasing their purchasing. Why we're calling them loyalists, I don't know. They might not be loyal at all. They might be forced to prescribe us because of formulary. But that dabbler one is the one that really hits me between the eyes because it's so disconnected from how doctors perceive themselves. And it also is so disconnected from any possible thought that we are the reason they're not writing our drug, right? Like, oh, they're just dabblers. They don't really take it seriously. They dabble. Like, how about they don't believe what we're telling them, or they just don't see the value. Like, it probably is a much more serious problem for the brand than the fact that they're dabblers. So I understand.
And the other thing, just something else that you said, like, so and then, you know, the whole circling the middle two, I also find that oftentimes, yeah, we'll say like, these are the target segments that we want to focus on, but then within their characteristics that make up this particular segment, we focus on one characteristic and we're like, this is the thing that we need to change to get them to move to be a loyalist or whatever. And it's, and I feel like that's an oversimplification too, because it's like, how do we know that it's this one thing? You know, maybe it's a few different things that we need to change about the way that they think or their experiences or whatever, you know?
Exactly. And so, for example, you know, segments could be attitudinal. You know, how do you feel about vaccines? They could be financial segments. Do you have access? Do you have coverage? Do you literally have the ability to get to a CVS to get your vaccine? Sorry about that. Or are you somehow stuck in the middle of nowhere? And so there's physical attributes. There's emotional attributes. There's intellectual attributes. You might not have even heard of a vaccine before. You know, people misunderstand what Gardasil is about. So we could say, well, you have an access issue for Gardasil. You have an emotional problem with Gardasil. You have an informational problem with Gardasil. And we just conflate them down to like, you're not writing Gardasil. That's
right.
Super not helpful. And so to me, it feels like a very kabuki-like ritual where we know where the end is going to be before we start. We're going to get three or four or five, probably four or five segments. We're going to ignore the left hand two. We're going to ignore the furthest one on the right. And it's the one or two in the middle that we feel are most amenable to persuasion based on nothing other than the fact that they write a little bit of this drug. That's the group we're going to do. And so to me, what I often do with these segmentation studies is I have to actually dig through 70 or 100 or 240 pages of data to find the real interesting nuggets, because calling someone a dabbler doesn't help me at all. So with that, I have ranted about what makes me sad. I guess it's not a rant, but these ones really do push my buttons. Dabbler is something that makes me see red, and I've seen it too many times. So, but you know, I'll throw it back to you. I mean, you know, you mentioned something like that segments are dynamic too. You know, like we see a segmentation study from 2012. Well, a lot has changed in pharmaceuticals since 2012. So you know, talk a little about that, like static segmentation.
Yeah, well, and I really quickly, before I even go there, I want to touch on something that you said, because I think it's important. You know, you said you go through, you know, pages and pages of research to be able to pull out what's actually like going to be meaningful, a meaningful characteristic for a certain segment. I think that that's really key. We talk a lot about synthesis and analysis of research and approaching that differently. And this is no different. This is another example of work that we do that, you know, we put a different lens on the way that we actually interpret and gather insight from research, it could really make all the difference. I think that's important to call out. I think the ones that you touched on really like are the main ones. And to my earlier point about just like a human truth in that human beings constantly change. Who you are today is different than who you might be a year from now and 5 years from now, et cetera. So I think that our segmentation needs to be more dynamic. What I mean by that is when we do a segmentation study, we need to think about how this segment might act in the short-term future and the long-term future and how that might be different than how they act today. And what that'll help us do, not only just forecast, so like, okay, how might we have to evolve our brand offerings in the future to still be consistent and keep up with these segments, but also we don't do segmentation studies every year. So oftentimes on our brands, we'll do a segmentation and we'll keep that for a few years. And we're not revisiting that constantly. We're not doing that primary research again and again and again. So it's fine. But if that's the approach that we take, it's important for us to then spend the time when we do the segmentation initially to futurescape a bit and start to think how they might act in the future. It'll just make our lives. Yeah, it'll make our lives easier in the future, and we'll be able to evolve the brand in a more meaningful way.
I hadn't thought of it, but like one of the studies I did, you know, well over a decade ago now, was about HIV infected individuals who were not yet on antiretroviral therapy. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who are too young to remember or never worked in the category, there was a moment, there was a period in time, it lasted a couple of years, where people were actually recommended to not go on therapy immediately because the therapies were very toxic. And so you would wait until you're, I think it was your white blood cell count would go down. It was a long time ago. But anyway, so these were people who were diagnosed with HIV, but told wait until your counts are low enough that it's worth you going on therapy. We don't say that anymore. It was therapeutically.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was a little crazy, right? But somebody had done a very large, well, it again, it made sense at the time that
the regimens then. Were. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they were toxic. Yeah. And also they were very unforgiving. If you took them the wrong way, you sort of couldn't ever take them again. But this is not a lesson in HIV. What was interesting is there were segments, right, that somebody had done a segmentation of these individuals and said, well, these are the kinds of individuals and this sort of thing. And then they did exactly what you said. This is what kicked this off in my head. The client said, is this a stable point of view? Are these segments stable? So we went back in and we looked and we said, no, they're not. In fact, what happens is the longer people go without treating their HIV, the less likely they are to want to treat it. It sort of recedes from their mind and this initial shock and fear of the diagnosis goes away and they just get on with their lives. And so this might actually be a progression more than a segmentation, that month one, you're like this, and month two, you're like that, and month eight, you're like that. And you should really go back and look much more carefully at how we develop these segments because we might be missing this time element. And they went, thanks. So that was that.
Right.
So I think as a therapeutic approach, it's sort of like buried in the mists of time for good reason. But, you know, that was an interesting one where time was maybe a critical missing factor. And again, it just points to, we can point to what people do fairly simply. Why they do it is much more complex, but it's much more important to our job as marketers. Anyway, that's really interesting what you mentioned, you know, like we should be thinking about, like, do we update our segments based on launches or based on time windows or based just, hey, it's 18 months, let's dust this off and freshen it up, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, so that's what we got for the segmentation topic. Hopefully that was informative and hopefully, you know, we can take some of these learnings and actually apply it and do in better segmentation work.
And nothing else, if you see a segmentation study with four or five segments and one of them is a dabbler, you know how we feel about it. So
exactly.
So with that, I'm Brad Davidson.
And I'm Sonika Garcia, and this is Breaking the Code. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks.